Say, how about the air conditioning? Could one get through the ducts? Possibly, but I didn't turn on the conditioner system. I cracked one of the air raid reserve bottles instead. Never mind. What would you like to eat? I wanted to suggest Mary herself, served up on lettuce and toast, but I thought better of it. Any chance of about 2 pounds of steak, just warmed through? We split a 5-pound steak between us, and I swear I ate the short half. While we chomped, we watched the newscast. Still no news from Iowa. Five. I did not get to see the bear traps. She locked a bedroom door. I know. I tried it. 3 hours later, she woke me, and we had a second breakfast. Presently, we struck cigarettes, and I reached over and switched off the newscast. It was devoted principally to a display of the state's entries for Miss America. Ordinarily, I would have watched with interest, but since none of the babes was round-shouldered, and their contest costumes could not possibly have concealed humps bigger than mosquito bites, it seemed to lack importance that day. I said, "Well?" Mary said, "We've got to arrange the facts we have dug up and rub the president's nose in them. Action has to be on a national scale. Global, really." "How?" "We've got to see him again." I repeated, "How?" She had no answer for that one. I said, "We've got only one route. By official channels. Through the old man." I put in the call, using both our codes so that Mary could hear too. Presently I heard, "Chief Deputy Oldfield, speaking for the old man. He's not available. Shoot." "It's got to be the old man." There was a pause, then, "I don't have either one of you down as on assignment. Is this official or unofficial?"
I guess you'd call it unofficial."
"Well, I won't put you through to the old man for anything unofficial. Anything official, I am handling. Make up your mind." I thanked him and switched off before I used any bad language. Then coded again. "The old man has a special code, in addition to regular channels, which is guaranteed to cause him to rise out of his coffin. But God help the agent who uses it unnecessarily. I haven't used it in 5 years." He answered with a burst of profanity. "Boss," I said, "on the Iowa matter." He broke off short.
"Yes?"
"Mary and I spent all night digging former data out of the files. We want to talk it over with you." The profanity resumed. Presently he told me to brief it and turn it in for analysis, and added that he intended to have my ears fried for a sandwich. "Boss," I said sharply.
"Huh?"
"If you can run out on the job, so can we. Both Mary and I are resigning from the section right now, and that's official." Mary's eyebrows went up, but she said nothing. There was a silence so long that I thought he had cut me off. Then he said, in a tired, whipped voice, "Palm Glade Hotel, North Miami Beach. I'll be the third sunburned from the end." "Right away." I sent for a taxi, and we went up on the roof. I had the hacky swing over the ocean to avoid the Carolina speed trap. We made good time. The old man was sunburned, all right. He lay there looking sullen and letting sand dribble through his fingers while we reported. I had brought along a little buzz box so that he could get it directly off the wire. He looked up sharply when we came to the point about 30-year cycles, but he allowed it to ride until he came to my later query about possible similar cycles and disappearances, whereupon he stopped me and called the section. "Get me analysis."
"Hello, Peter. This is the boss.
I want a curve on unexplained disappearances, quantitative, starting with 1800.
Hmm? People, of course. Did you think I meant latchkeys?
Smooth out known factors and discount steady load.
What I want to see is humps and valleys.
When?
I want it 2 hours ago. What are you waiting for?
After he switched off, he struggled to his feet.
Let me hand him his cane and said,
Well, back to the jute mill.
We've no facilities here.
To the White House?
Mary asked, eagerly.
Huh?
Be your age. You two have picked up nothing that would change the president's mind.
Oh, then what?
I don't know.
Keep quiet unless you have a bright idea.
The old man had a car at hand, of course, and I drove us back.
Before I turned it over to block control, I said,
Boss, I've got a caper that might convince the president, if you can get him to hold still.
He grunted.
Like this, I went on. Send two agents in, me and one other. The other agent carries a portable scanning rig, and keeps it trained on me the whole time. You get the president to watch what happens.
Suppose nothing happens.
I plan to make it happen. First, I am going where the spaceship landed, blow my way on through. We'll get close-up pics of the real ship, piped right into the White House. After that, I plan to go back to Barnes's office and investigate those round shoulders. I'll tear her shirts right off in front of the camera. There won't be any finesse to the job. I'll just bust things wide open with a sledgehammer. You realize you would have the same chance as a mouse at a cat convention?
I'm not so sure. As I see it, these things haven't any superhuman powers.
I'll bet they're strictly limited to whatever the human being they are riding can do. Maybe less. I don't plan on being a martyr. In any case, I'll get you pics. Good ones.
It might work, Mary put in.
I'll be the other agent. I can...
The old man and I said no together. And then I flushed.
It was not my prerogative to say so. Mary went on. I was going to say that I am the logical one because of the, talent I have for spotting a man with a parasite on him.
No, the old man repeated. It won't be necessary. Where he's going, they'll all have riders. Assumed so until proved otherwise. Besides, I am saving you for something.
She should have shut up, but for once did not.
For what?
This is important.
Instead of snapping at her, the old man said quietly, So is the other job. I'm planning to make you a presidential bodyguard, as soon as I can get it through his head that this is serious.
Oh.
She thought about it and answered, boss.
Yeah?
I'm not certain I could spot a woman who was possessed. I'm not, equipped for it.
So we take his woman's secretaries away from him.
Ask me a hard one.
And Mary, you'll be watching him too. He's a man, you know.
She turned that over in her mind. And suppose I find that one has gotten to him, in spite of everything.
You take necessary action. The vice president succeeds to the chair, and you get shot for treason. Simple.
Now, about this mission. I'll send Jarvis with a scanner, and I think I'll include Davidson as an extra hatchet man.
While Jarvis keeps the pickup on you, Davidson can keep his eyes on Jarvis. And you can try to keep one eye on him. Ring around the rosy.
You think it will work, then?
No, but any plan of action is better than no plan. Maybe it will stir up something.
Well, we headed for Iowa, Jarvis, Davidson, and I. The old man went back to Washington. He took Mary along. She cornered me as we were about to leave, grabbed me by the ears, kissed me firmly, and said, Sam, try to come back. I got all tingly and felt like a 15-year-old. Second childhood, I guess.
Davidson roaded the car beyond the place where I had found the bridge out. I was navigating, using a large-scale ordnance map on which had been pinpointed the exact landing site of the real spaceship. The bridge, which was still out, gave a close-by and precise reference point. We turned off the road 0.2 miles due east of the site, and jeeped through the scrub to the spot. Nobody tried to stop us. Almost to the spot, I should say. We ran into freshly burned-over ground and decided to walk. The site as shown by the space station photograph was included in the brush fire area, and there was no flying saucer. It would have taken a better detective than I will ever be to show that one had ever landed there. The fire had destroyed the traces of any. Jarvis scanned everything anyhow, but I knew that the slugs had won another round. As we came out, we ran into an elderly farmer. Following doctrine, we kept a wary distance, although he looked harmless. "Quite a fire," I remarked, sidling away. "Sure was," he said dolefully. "Killed 2 of my best milch cows, the poor dumb brutes." "You fellas reporters?" "Yes," I agreed. "But we've been sent out on a wild goose chase." I wish Mary were along. Probably this character was naturally round-shouldered. On the other hand, assuming that the old man was right about the spaceship, and he had to be right, then this all-too-innocent bumpkin must know about it, and was covering it up. Ergo, he was hag-ridden. I decided that I had to do it. The chances of capturing a live parasite and getting its picture on the channels back to the White House were better here than they would be in a crowd. I threw a glance at my teammates. They were both alert, and Jarvis was scanning. As the farmer turned to go, I tripped him. He went face down, and I was on his back like a monkey, clawing at his shirt. Jarvis moved in and got a close-up. Davidson moved over to cover point. I had his back bare before he got his wind. And it was bare. As clean as mine. No parasite. No sign of one. Nor any place on his body, which I made sure of before I let him up. I helped him up and brushed him off. His clothes were filthy with ashes, and so were mine. "I'm terribly sorry," I said. "I've made a big mistake." He was trembling with anger. "You young..." He couldn't seem to find a word bad enough for me. He looked at all of us, and his mouth quivered. "I'll have the law on you. If I were 20 years younger, I'd lick all 3 of you." "Believe me, old-timer, it was a mistake." "Mistake?" His face broke, and I thought he was going to cry. "I come back from Omaha and find my place burned, half my stock gone, and my son-in-law no place around? I come out to find out why strangers are snooping around my land, and I like to get torn to pieces. Mistake? What's the world coming to?" I thought I could answer that last one, but I did not try to. I tried to pay him for the indignity, but he slapped my money to the ground. We tucked our tails and got out. When we were back in the car and rolling again, Davidson said to me, "Are you and the old man sure you know what you're up to?" "I can make a mistake," I said savagely. "But have you ever known the old man to?" No. Can't say as I have. Where next?" "Straight into WDES main station. This one won't be a mistake." "Anyhow," Jarvis commented, "I got good pickup throughout." I did not answer. At the toll gates in Des Moines, the gatekeeper hesitated when I offered the fee. He glanced at a notebook, and then at our plates. "Sheriff has a call out for this car," he said. "Pull over to the right."
He left the barrier down.
Right it is, I agreed. Backed up about 30 feet, and gunned her for all she was worth.
The section's cars are beefed up, and hopped up, too. A good thing, for the barrier was stout. I did not slow down on the far side.
This, said Davidson, dreamily, is interesting. Do you still know what you are doing?
Cut the chatter, I snapped. I may be crazy, but I am still agent in charge. Get this, both of you. We aren't likely to get out of this, but we are going to get those picks.
As you say, Chief.
I was running ahead of any pursuit. I slammed to a stop in front of the station and we poured out. None of Uncle Charlie's indirect methods. We swarmed into the first elevator that was open and punched for the top floor. Barnes's floor. When we got there, I left the door of the car open, hoping to use it later. As we came into the outer office, the receptionist tried to stop us, but we pushed on by. The girls looked up, startled. I went straight to Barnes's inner door and tried to open it. It was locked. I turned to his secretary. "Where's Barnes?"
"Who was calling, please?" she said, polite as a fish.
I looked down at the fit of the sweater across her shoulders. Humped. "By God," I said to myself, "this one has to be." She was here when I killed Barnes. I bent over and pulled up her sweater. I was right. I had to be right. For the second time, I stared at the raw flesh of one of the parasites. I wanted to throw up, but I was too busy. She struggled and clawed and tried to bite. I judo cut the side of her neck, almost getting my hand in the filthy mess, and she went limp. I gave her 3 fingers in the pit of her stomach for good measure, then swung her around.
"Jarvis," I yelled, "get a close-up."
The idiot was fiddling with his gear, bending over it. His big hind end between me and the pickup. He straightened up. "School's out," he said. "Blew a tube."
"Replace it. Hurry."
A sonographer stood up on the other end of the room and fired. Not at me, not at Jarvis, but at the scanner. Hit it, too, and both Davidson and I burned her down. As if it had been a signal, about 6 of them jumped Davidson. They did not seem to have guns, they just swarmed over him. I still hung on to the secretary and shot from where I was. I caught a movement out of the corner of my eye and turned to find Barnes number 2, standing in his doorway. I shot him through the chest to be sure to get the slug I knew was on his back. I turned back to the slaughter. Davidson was up again. A girl crawled toward him. She seemed wounded. He shot her full in the face, and she stopped. His next bolt was just past my ear. I looked around and said, "Thanks. Now let's get out of here. Jarvis, come on." The elevator was still open and we rushed in, me still burdened with Barnes' secretary. I slammed the door closed and started it. Davidson was trembling and Jarvis was dead white.
"Buck up," I said. "You weren't shooting people, you were shooting things, like this."
I held the girl's body up and looked down at her back myself. Then I almost collapsed. My specimen, the one I had grabbed with its host to take back alive, was gone. Slipped to the floor, probably, and oozing away during the ruckus.
"Jarvis," I said, "did you get anything up there?"
He shook his head and said nothing.
Neither did I.
Neither did Davidson.
The girl's back was covered with a red rash, like a million pinpricks, in the area where the thing had ridden her. I pulled her sweater down and settled her on the floor against the wall of the car. She was still unconscious and likely to stay that way. When we reached street level, we left her in the car. Apparently nobody noticed, for there was no hue and cry as we went through the lobby to the street. Our car was still standing there, and a policeman had his foot on it while making out a ticket. He handed it to me as we got in. "You know you can't park in this area, Mac," he said reprovingly. I said sorry, and signed his copy as it seemed the safest and quickest thing to do. Then I gunned the car away from the curb, got as clear as I could of traffic, and blasted her off, right from a city street. I wondered whether or not he'd added that to the ticket. When I had her up to altitude, I remembered to switch the license plates and identification code. The old man thinks of everything. But he did not think much of me when we got back. I tried to report on the way in, but he cut me short and ordered us into the section offices. Mary was there with him. That was all I needed to know. If despite my flop the old man had convinced the president, she would have stayed. He let me tell what had happened with only an occasional grunt. "How much did you see?" I asked when I finished. "Transmission cut off when you hit the toll barrier," he informed me. I can't say that the president was impressed by what he saw.
I suppose not.
"In fact, he told me to fire you." I stiffened. I had been ready to offer my resignation, but this took me by surprise. "I am perfectly will—" I started out. "Pipe down," the old man snapped. I told him that he could fire me, but that he could not fire my subordinates. "You are a thumb-fingered dolt," he went on more quietly. "But you can't be spared. Not now."
"Thanks."
Mary had been wandering restlessly around the room. I had tried to catch her eye, but she was not having any. Now she stopped back of Jarvis's chair and gave the old man the same sign she had given about Barnes. I hit Jarvis in the side of the head with my heater, and he sagged out of his chair. "Stand back, Davidson," the old man rapped. His own gun was out and pointed at Davidson's chest. "Mary, how about him?" "He's all right."
"And him?"
"Sam's clean." The old man's eyes moved from one of us to the other, and I have never felt closer to death. "Both of you, peel off your shirts," he said sourly. We did, and Mary was right on both counts. I had begun to wonder whether or not I would know if I did have a parasite on me. "Now him," the old man ordered. "Gloves, both of you." We stretched Jarvis out on his face and very carefully cut his clothing away. We had our live specimen. Six. I felt myself ready to retch. The thought of that thing traveling right behind me in a closed car all the way from Iowa was almost more than my stomach could stand. I'm not squeamish. I hid once for 4 days in the sewers of Moscow. But you don't know what the sight of one can do to you unless you yourself have seen one while knowing what it is. I swallowed hard and said, "Let's see what we can do to work it off. Maybe we can still save Jarvis." I did not really think so. I had a deep-down hunch that anyone who had been ridden by one of those things was spoiled. Permanently. I guess I had a superstitious notion that they ate souls. Whatever that means. The old man waved us back. "Forget about Jarvis. But stow it. If he can be saved, a bit longer won't matter. In any case..." He shut up, and so did I. I knew what he meant. The principle which declared that the individual was all important now called for canceling Jarvis out as a factor. I.e., we were expendable. The people of the United States were not. Pardon the speech. I liked Jarvis. The old man, gun drawn and wary,
continued to watch the unconscious agent and the thing on his back. He said to Mary, "Get the president on the screen, special code 0007. Mary went to his desk and did so. I heard her talking into the muffler. But my own attention was on the parasite. It made no move to leave its host, but pulsed slowly with iridescent ripples spreading across it. Presently Mary reported, "I can't get him, sir. One of his assistants is on the screen." "Which one?" "Mr. McDonough." The old man winced, and so did I. McDonough was an intelligent, likable man who hadn't changed his mind on anything since he was housebroken. The president used him as a buffer. The old man bellowed, not bothering with the muffler. No, the president was not available. No, he could not be reached with the message. No, Mr. McDonough was not exceeding his authority. The president had been explicit, and the old man was not on the list of exceptions, if there was such a list, which Mr. McDonough did not concede. Yes, he would be happy to make an appointment. He would squeeze the old man in somehow, and that was a promise. How would next Friday do? Today, out of the question. Tomorrow, equally impossible. The old man switched off, and I thought he was going to have a stroke. But after a moment, he took two deep breaths. His features relaxed, and he stumped back to us, saying, "Dave, slip down the hall and ask Doc Graves to step in. The rest of you keep your distance and your eyes peeled." The head of the biological lab came in shortly, wiping his hands as he came. "Doc," said the old man, "there is one that isn't dead." Graves looked at Jarvis, then more closely at Jarvis's back. "Interesting," he said. "Unique, possibly." He dropped to one knee. "Stand back." Graves looked up. "But I must have an opportunity," he said reasonably. "You and my half-wit aunt. Listen, I want you to study it, yes, but that purpose has low priority. First, you've got to keep it alive. Second, you've got to keep it from escaping. Third, you've got to protect yourself." Graves smiled. "I'm not afraid of it. I be afraid of it. That's an order." I was about to say that I think I must rig up an incubator to care for it, after we remove it from the host. The dead specimen you gave me did not afford much opportunity for studying its chemistry. But it is evident that these things need oxygen. You smothered the other one. Don't misunderstand me. Not free oxygen, but oxygen from its host. Perhaps a large dog would suffice. "No," snapped the old man. "Leave it right where it is." "Eh?" Graves looked surprised. "Is this man a volunteer?" The old man did not answer. Graves went on. "Human laboratory subjects must be volunteers. Professional ethics, you know." "These scientific laddies never do get broken to harness. I think they keep their bags packed." The old man calmed himself and said quietly, "Dr. Graves, every agent in this section is a volunteer for whatever I find necessary. That is what they sign up for. Please carry out my orders. Get a stretcher in here and take Jarvis out. Use care." The old man dismissed us after they had carted Jarvis away, and Davidson and Mary and I went to the lounge for a drink, or four. We needed them. Davidson had the shakes. When the first drink failed to fix him, I said, "Look, Dave, I feel as bad about those girls as you do, but it could not be helped. Get that through your head. It could not be helped." "How bad was it?" asked Mary. "Pretty bad. I don't know how many we killed, maybe six, maybe a dozen. There was no time to be careful. We weren't shooting people, not intentionally. We were shooting parasites." I turned to Davidson. Don't you see that? He seemed to take a brace.
That's just it. They weren't human, he went on. I think I could shoot my own brother, if the job required it. But these things aren't human. You shoot, and they keep coming toward you. They don't... He broke off. All I felt was pity. After a bit, he got up to go to the dispensary to get a shot for what ailed him. Mary and I talked a little longer, trying to figure out answers and getting nowhere. Then she announced that she was sleepy and headed for the woman's dormitory. The old man had ordered all hands to sleep in that night. So, after a nightcap, I went to the boy's wing and crawled into a sack. I did not get to sleep at once. I could hear the rumbling of the city above us, and I kept imagining it in the state Des Moines was already in. The air raid alarm woke me. I stumbled into my clothing as the blowers sighed off. Then the intercom bawled in the old man's voice. Anti-gas and anti-radiation procedures. Seal everything. All hands gather in the conference hall. Move. Being a field agent, I was a supernumerary with no local duties. I shuffled down the tunnel from the living quarters to the offices. The old man was in the big hall, looking grim. I wanted to ask him what was up, but there was a mixed dozen of clerks, agents, stenos, and such, there before me, and I decided not to. After a bit, the old man sent me out to get the door tally from the guard on watch. The old man called the roll himself, and presently it was clear that every living person listed on the door tally was now inside the hall. From old Miss Haynes, the old man's private secretary, down to the steward of the staff lounge, except the door guard on watch and Jarvis. The tally had to be right. We keep track of who goes in and out a good bit more carefully than a bank keeps track of money. I was sent out again for the door guard. I took a call back to the old man to persuade him it was all right for him to leave his post. Then he threw the bolt switch and followed me. When we got back, Jarvis was there, still attended by Graves and one of his lab men. He was on his feet and wrapped in a hospital robe. Conscious, apparently, but he seemed dopey. When I saw him, I began to have some notion of what it was all about. The old man did not leave us in doubt. He was facing the assembled staff and keeping his distance. Now he drew his gun. One of the invading parasites is loose among us, he said. To some of you that means something. Too much. To the rest of you, I will have to explain. As the safety of all of us, and of our whole race, depends this moment on complete cooperation and utter obedience. He went on to explain briefly, but with ugly exactness, what a parasite was, what the situation was. In other words, he concluded, the parasite is almost certainly here in this room. One of us looks human, but is actually an automaton, moving at the will of our deadliest and most dangerous enemy. There was a murmur from the staff. People stole glances to each other. Some tried to draw away. A moment before, we had been a team, picked for temperament compatibility. We were now a mob, each suspicious of the other. I felt it myself and found myself edging away from the man closest to me. Ronald, the lounge steward, it was. I had known him for years. Graves cleared his throat. Chief, he started in, I want you to understand that I took every reasonable... Stow it. I don't want excuses. Bring Jarvis out in front. Take his robe off. Graves shut up, and he and his assistant complied. Jarvis did not seem to mind. He seemed only partly aware of his surroundings. There was a nasty blue welt across his left cheekbone and temple, but that was not the cause. I did not hit him that hard. Graves must have drugged him.
Turn him around, the old man ordered.
Jarvis let himself be turned. There was the mark of the slug, a red rash on the shoulders and neck.
You can all see, the old man went on, where the thing rode him.
There had been some whispers and one embarrassed giggle when Jarvis had been stripped. Now, there was a dead hush.
Now, said the old man, we are going to get that slug. Furthermore, we are going to capture it alive. That warning is for you eager boys with itchy trigger fingers. You have all seen where a parasite rides on a man. I'm warning you, if the parasite gets burned, I'll burn the man who did it. If you have to shoot the host to catch it, shoot low. Come here.
He pointed his gun at me.
I started toward him. He halted me halfway between the crowd and himself. Graves, take Jarvis out of the way. Sit him down behind me. No, leave his robe off.
Jarvis was led across the room, still docile, and Graves and his helper rejoined the group. The old man turned his attention back to me.
Take out your gun. Drop it on the floor.
The old man's gun was pointed at my belly button. I was very careful how I drew mine. I slid it some 6 feet away from me.
Take off your clothes, all of them.
I am not a shrinking violet, but that is an awkward order to carry out.
The old man's gun overcame my inhibitions.
It did not help any to have some of the younger girls giggling at me as I got down to the buff. One of them said, not too sotto voce,
not bad.
And another replied, nobby, I'd say. I blushed like a bride.
After he looked me over, the old man told me to pick up my gun and stand beside me.
Back me up, he ordered, and keep an eye on the door. You, Dottie something or other, you're next.
Dottie was a girl from the clerical pool. She had no gun, of course, and she had evidently been in bed when the alarm sounded. She was dressed in a floor-length negligee.
She stepped forward, stopped, but did nothing more.
The old man waved his gun at her.
Come on, get him off. They'll take all night.
You really mean it? She said incredulously.
Move!
She started, almost jumped.
Well, she said, no need to take a person's head off.
She bit her lower lip and then slowly unfastened the clasp at her waist.
I ought to get a bonus for this, she said defiantly, then threw the robe from her all in one motion.
Whereupon she ruined her build-up by posing for an instant. Not long, but you couldn't miss it. I conceded that she had something to display, although I was in no mood to appreciate it.
Over against the wall, the old man said savagely.
Renfrew?
I don't know whether the old man alternated men and women on purpose or not, but it was a good idea, as it kept resistance to a minimum.
Oh, shucks, I do know. The old man never did anything by accident.
After my ordeal, the men were businesslike, though some were obviously embarrassed. As to the women, some giggled and some blushed, but none of them objected too much. I would have found it interesting if the circumstances had been different. As it was, we were all bound to learn things about each other that we had not known. For instance, there was this girl whom we used to call Chesty. Never mind. In 20 minutes or so, there were more square yards of goose flesh exposed than I had ever seen before, and the pile of guns on the floor looked like an arsenal. When Mary's turn came, she set a good example by taking off her clothes quickly and in a completely unprovocative manner. The old man should have called her first,
instead of that dotty baggage. There, Mary made nothing of it, and wore her skin with quiet dignity. But what I saw did nothing to cool down my feelings about her. Mary had added considerably to the pile of hardware. I decided she just plain liked guns. Me, I never found use for more than one. Finally, we were all mother naked and quite evidently free of parasites, except the old man himself and his secretary, Miss Haynes. I think he was a bit in awe of Miss Haynes. She was older than he and inclined to boss him. It dawned on me whom it had to be, if the old man were right. He could have been wrong, for we all knew the parasite might be on a ceiling girder, waiting to drop on someone's neck. The old man looked distressed, and poked about the pile of clothing with his cane. He knew that there was nothing in it, or perhaps he was really making sure. Finally he looked up at his secretary. "Miss Haynes, if you please. You're next." I thought to myself, "Brother, this time you are going to have to use force." She did not move. She stood there, facing him down, a statue of offended virginity. I could see that he was about to take action, so I moved closer to him and said, out of the corner of my mouth, "Boss, how about yourself? Take him off." He jerked his head around and looked startled. "I mean it," I said. "It's you or she. It might be either. Get out of those duds. The old man can relax to the inevitable." He said, "Have her stripped, and I'm next." He began fumbling at his zippers, looking grim. I told Mary to take a couple of women and peel Miss Haynes. When I turned back, the old man had his trousers at half-mast, and Miss Haynes chose to make a break for it. The old man was between me and her, and I couldn't get a clean shot, and every other agent in the place was disarmed. Again, I don't think it was an accident. The old man did not trust them not to shoot when the parasite was discovered. He wanted that slug alive. She was out the door and running down the passage by the time I could get organized. I could have winged her in the passageway, but I was inhibited by two things. First, I could not shift gears emotionally that fast. I mean to say, she was to me still old Lady Haynes, the spinster secretary to the boss, the one who bawled me out for poor grammar in my reports. In the second place, if she was carrying a parasite, I did not want to risk burning it. Not after what we had been told. I am not the world's best shot, anyhow.